I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And it's been almost 4 weeks from memory, but here we are. What's going on, Boxhead?
Not much, man. Not much at all.
Well, the pool stage of the World Cup is over, heading into the quarterfinals. And in terms of teams that got through, no surprises. From memory, I think we picked everything exactly as it would play out. I think the only thing we had different was I thought Samoa would finish top of the pool instead of England. You thought England would finish top of the pool. But other than that, we picked all 8 qualifying teams. So,
yeah.
What we'll do...
So we should too.
Have a quick run through. Obviously, not a lot needs to be said for a couple of the teams that were in some of the pool stages. Seen a lot the last few days. There was one on our group page as well, people talking about World Cup and what you could do to make a difference, etc. I just think it is what it is. It's a bit like the Rugby World Cup. Russia and other teams, Japan for a while was in and, you know, copped some big scores. That's sort of what happens. People saying more from certain nations or certain areas, you know, like realistically there's a qualifying period over the couple of years. Plenty of teams go through the process. It is what it is.
Yeah. If you want to have a World Cup, then
that's
sort this of, is where we're at the moment in the development of our game.
And the other thing as well, a lot of the talk heading into it, again, especially from Australian journalists in particular, about these players not playing for Australia, etc., they're not exactly struggling, are they?
Australia, aren't they?
Leading to the point again that if you would have cut off a lot of that talent from going to play for a couple of the other countries, well, then you're not really feeding into the concept of the World Cup in the first place.
You would have had bigger holes in these school lines.
So, yeah, I certainly don't agree with that narrative, and it's played out that way, but we'll run through it. Group A, England qualified first, Samoa qualified second, Greece and France were eliminated. The big game of that pool was obviously the first week clash, which turned out to be an absolute Barry Crocker.
It was a fizzer.
Samoa rolled up and got belted by 60.
Yep.
Copped 24 points, in particular in the last 10 minutes, in a sin bin. And you kind of sat there and thought, well, have they gone over there to take this seriously? Or England just red hot? Is it a combination of a bunch of things?
And I'd heard some things out of the...
Yeah, I got some things.
That just... said that Samoa weren't really going to be starting the tournament off as quickly as what they definitely should.
Let's just say that the first week was more about the experience than it was the football, unfortunately, and that was their most important game to make sure they got the better side of the draw, if possible, but they certainly blew that. Then two games following that, score lines, again, hard to compare, but what England did, what they did, is right on track with what I would have expected.
Yeah,
a closer result between the two, but their first week... was the big one. England just rolled through them. It was way too easy. They had zero line speed. They made errors coming out of their own end. They just battered them to death. And
gave themselves no chance.
Yeah, off the back of just pouring through the middle. Like, the tries they scored were very simple. Because they were just getting rolled through, they just shifted to the edges and found space quite easy. Like, there wasn't a lot of science in what England did game one. They just blew them off the park. So that was very disappointing because that was one that I looked at and thought, this is going to be a good game of football. But I think the challenge now is Samoa have put themselves in a position to move through, but again, have now ended up on the harder side of the draw. So now they're going to have to play Tonga instead of ending up on the flip side, which would have been Papua New Guinea, which is no easy feat, mind you.
No.
But it would have been much, much more feasible for them to get to the semi and or a final being on the other side of the draw. So for them, I guess your questions are still the same, or they're still the same for me as the spine. I know they're settled on Luai. Obviously found their better football in the two easier games. Played that power game. Second phase were good out of yardage. Getting Taylan back in certainly made a difference. But that's the other thing, I guess, for them is health. They lost 3 players in the first game. Then they just lost Alia, and Tago hasn't been playing either. So they've gone over there with a squad of 24. They lost 5 and they called in a couple of guys that are English-based just to fill some holes in their squad.
Mm.
So I still think they've got a good enough 17 to give it a shake. The question is, can they do it from the harder side of the draw? That's the real question. And then who's your half?
Mind. I think it's good that Samoa are going to play Tonga in a World Cup game. It'll be good.
Yeah. Oh, I would have honestly preferred still again that they avoided
that. When you're Samoa, there's no easy side of the draw. Because they're, realistically, they if they get beat here, we'll go, oh, well, that's probably an underachievement because they didn't make a semi.
Yeah. Well, Sualee, definitely your one. Luai, we know, is the 6. 9, they've gone with Levi, majority of the tournament. News only had one game off the bench, sort of. They've pretty much stuck with that. And they've had Harris Tavita the last few games as sort of the bench utility. I think that's the question for me. I prefer Harris Tavita over Milford at this point. Because in bigger games, I want someone who's a better defender, someone who's more likely to take the responsibility to steer the team and let Luai, you know, play his natural game. Which is pretty much they set up on those long side shifts, play to the left and let him be free. When it's Milford and Luai in particular that first game, there was no control whatsoever. Was very erratic. Their set ends were poor. And again, bigger games, I just prefer someone who defends well. I think Harris Tavita is a good defender.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I think they're a little more settled in that regard. And then I guess your question is, yeah, I don't know if they get a Tago back, but yeah, they've lost Ueli Alloway, these sort of guys. Forward pack was pretty good. They'll have a loaded bench and getting like Taylor back in, like I said last week, along with Toto. Sorry, I was like banging the table. You know, that looked more like the Samoa we thought we were going to see. But England, on the other hand, cruised through. Probably the only game they would be disappointed with was the French game. They started well, got into halftime, 18-12. They blew them out in the back end. They obliterated Greece, which is no surprise, and obviously did a number on Samoa. But, yeah, as we sort of previewed there, like the forward pack, the NRL guys, if they fired well and what they were doing, yardage again, Herbie, Dom Young, all had very good tournaments. Radley's fitted in well. Good addition to the way they like to play and yeah, having an extra.
They haven't really played a difficult game, though.
No. Well, again, like I said, Samoa would have been the only one, and they obviously...
We're waiting to see him play Australia and England.
That's power enough. So, I think Papua will at least give him a decent physical challenge. I don't know whether they've got the game over 80 minutes or the quality, but...
I doubt it.
If you're PNG, you go in there, complete high play physical, and just try and tee off on him, I guess. But, yeah, I think for England, I'll... More impressed than what I expected, but again, I think a lot of that's been heavy NRL influence. I think the guys that they had in their forward pack, the way Radley's linked in with the halves and played, and then particularly, like I said, Herbie and Dom Young, they've done a good job. But English-based players like McGeeken, to not be their last World Cup, I think he's done a good job. Williams has certainly taken advantage of the platform they've laid in the pool games and ran things pretty well. They've rolled through different guys in different positions. I don't quite know who they'll settle on. Callum Watkins missed a game. They had Hall in for a couple of games. They've sort of rotated through their back line. But I guess for them, your big question, like you said, is now. They should get over the top of Papua New Guinea. But if they have to play Samoa again or play Tonga, that's a bit more of a challenge heading into the final against Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah.
So you'd think their test wouldn't really come there. Wrapping up on those other two teams, thought the French at least look well coached and better put together, but yeah, it's just that difference again in quality and
class.
Having that top end.
Yeah.
Thought their halves weren't bad. Like
no, they acquitted themselves well.
Yeah, Guizhou we know about. I thought Morgay, the 6 was good, and Garcia, the 13, etc. But another one of those things that we say, more French-based players, more guys playing in the Super League, they'll be better in the long run if they stay on this path. Mm. And the Greece side, well, no surprise when you're rolling there with only 2 or 3 NRL players and a lot of guys that are playing Massey Cup or, you know, different levels altogether, it's always going to be a tall task, and it certainly was that.
Yeah.
You saw minimal moments where Magoulias put in one of his famous chip kicks or Ilias backed up on one and set one up, and Mamazoulos popped out a few times, but probably the one that caught my eye a little bit was Sateni Takomo. He's a young Sharks fullback. He's 18. He's gone over there, had to juggle his HSC and playing, and, you know, They're the sort of guys you find in these sort of tournaments get an opportunity. I thought he had some moments, but obviously their last two games, weren't very enjoyable. Copping 70 and 90 points. So. Well,
yeah, that's to be expected, though.
Mm. That wraps up, like we said, Group A side of things. England and Samoa coming through. Pool B, again, Australia come through first, undefeated. Fiji second. Then you've got Italy and Scotland, their game against each other. Scotland actually had the better of the opportunities, the possession and the field position, couldn't come up with any points. And Italy, off the back of a bit of a connection they had to their spine and a couple of players there, they're at the Sunshine Coast Falcons, and Pacelli, Mason, Atkinson linked in pretty well with Jack Campagnolo, who's been at South this year and played some time up there, sort of picked them apart in that game. Well, can't say I was surprised, but either way, the score ended up. But then from there on in, obviously, they...
Scotland were horrible.
Scotland were, yeah. But Italy then copped the rough end of the stick, as to be expected after that. Fiji, after a rough game against Australia, obliterated them. Then Australia, the other day, you know, rotating players and chopping and changing, still put 60 in. But Scotland, yeah, they're a real disappointment. A lot of guys, again, Super League based. I thought James Bell was probably the standout and ex-Warrior. But other than that, for them, very disappointing.
They were awful.
Yeah. Italy, like I said, a couple of those names from the Falcons. Daniel Atkinson spent a little bit of time at Melbourne pre the tournament. There was a few clubs looking to bring him back in an NRL fold. So for him, I think he didn't do himself any harm at trying to slide in. I heard that the Sharks and Newcastle were sort of looking. But there were some guys there that played cup level that had some moments. But again, when you don't have that top end, it's always going to be hard when you have to play those better sides.
Yeah, it's an achievement for them to win a game.
Yeah, Nathan Brown acquitted himself well as captain. There's talk that he'll be heading back to the Tigers and trying to settle that once he gets home. So he certainly did his job over there. But for Australia, I guess our questions are the same before we went over there. Did we pick the right squad? Will he pick the right squad moving forward? And I like the halves debate. We were pretty clear on this before things even kicked off. It's a no-brainer for me that it's clearly Munster. And I'd have Hunt and Grant. He's talked even that Cherry Evans might get that bench spot. If you're going to carry one of Hunt or Cherry Evans a ton,
you would think so.
He's more equipped to play nine. He's more equipped to slot into a third hand role. And as a half, he's, you know, kicking game overall. He's good. All those other areas are good enough or comparable to what DC brings to your team.
Yeah.
And on top of that, I want to start Hunt still and bring Harry on for 60 or so minutes. So regardless of that, I would prefer to have Hunt there. So I don't know how he picks Cherry Evans. I really don't. The other question I guess we have left over is his outside backs and his edges. He's rolled through some different guys. I think surely he sticks with Yo at lock, but then the whole idea again of Murray being forced into a back row spot instead of a Martin or a Crichton or an Eno. Like, you got three genuine back rows. Pick a genuine back row. I'll put Murray in there on your bench for a bit of leg speed. Buy into what you've gone over there with. We haven't gone over there with a huge forward pack. We've gone over there with a lot of mobility, skill, footwork and the ability to produce quick play the balls. Playing to that strength for me is Kevin Murray's best asset, which is quick play the ball. I just have him coming off the bench as part of your middle rotation. But yeah, more than likely he'll pick Jake. Yeah, Regan or someone like that might miss out. And, you know, like a guy like Collins, he's talking about playing New Zealand if we get to that point with a four forwards on the bench, possibly as well. So there's a lot of things there that worry me if we do get to that point, which obviously you would expect we're going to beat Lebanon in the quarterfinal.
You would think so.
And then, yeah, your outside-back combinations. He's rolled through some guys. I definitely think he'd more than likely go with Luttrell and Fox and then probably the Cowboys combo of Holmes and Tuilagi.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I guess your bigger questions, like I said, the makeup of our middles, our forward pack, our edges, Mal Meninga worries me sometimes. He really does.
You and me both.
And when you get to a team like New Zealand, if you stuff around with the forward side of thing or don't pick to your strengths or try and do something to combat it, I think, yeah, that's a real, real big question mark for me. So other than that, they've just absolutely strolled through the pools. Fiji, I thought Fiji in the end ended up doing pretty well considering the players that didn't end up going for him in the forward pack.
Yeah, they did wrong.
Patched it up at the end. Kikau did a good job. Young Wong, Sia Wong from the Roosters. Taniela Sudruga, I haven't really seen or heard much. He's a sevens player at the Cowboys. Did a season this year. He's a winger. They've been playing him as a 13. Did a good job, but they got a similar question. They've rolled through Arpi at half. They gave Penny some time at nine, played him off the bench. Rawalui played in the halves. Wakeham's played in the halves. Like, they've sort of got to make a decision this week because they're playing New Zealand, which is, you know, unfortunate for them. I think it's going to be the end of their tournament, but they probably need to be pretty certain this week about what they're going to pick in terms of halves.
Yeah, of course.
And then can they match them in the forward cattle?
No, I can't.
And that was the big hole with the players that they missed out on with the Safidis, Tarek Sims, etc., and a few guys going over there. But, yeah, like we said, after that disappointing first-up loss, they found their way through. So Australia, Fiji through Group C. Your big game was obviously Lebanon, New Zealand, and Lebanon actually acquitted themselves quite well as well. Did kind of what you'd expect you'd want to do against a team that you're up against the wall and try and throw them off their game. Short kickoffs, short dropouts, early kicks, trying to play a bit of different football, but realistically, at the end of the day, any time they pulled themselves back within range, you just saw the quality do the job when it needed to, in particular Joey Manu in that first game. And even from there, I've said it the other day, I find it hard to get a gauge on New Zealand because, again, they've sort of cruised to the pool.
Mm.
Hughes didn't play two of the games. Moses didn't play. Murata, Dallin missed a game. Like, they realistically rolled out Hughes to get a run under his belt the other night, and he was very dominant, again, against lesser opposition.
Yeah.
But I find it hard to get a real gauge. Like, we'll get a better gauge this week because they're obviously going to play well. But coming into them, Australia, I think it's what happens on the day. And for them, I guess they've had more question marks over players' health, which is their probably biggest issue. If they get to the semi and Hughes is under a cloud, Murata's not available, Moses under a cloud, Jared just got back from suspension, got suspended again, that's probably their biggest enemy.
Can get suspended.
Health and discipline. Yeah, he went there to write off his 3-game suspension, got on for 10 minutes and got sent off and got suspended again. So that's Jared being Jared. But their forward pack certainly can definitely do a job on Australia. And if Hughes is in his best form with Brown and Manu, etc., they've got the job there. But yeah, I guess for them, when you've got those question marks on health, that's the biggest thing. They have to get there and be able to pick their best 17.
Yeah, of course.
Lebanon, for me, were one of the teams I actually quite enjoyed watching. I think Michael Cech has done a good job, considering he's not from that side of things. And they got the best out of their lesser lights. A couple of guys from Massey, a couple of guys playing cup, playing some good footy. And it does help, obviously, when you've got a quality spine. Moses, Dewey, done a really, really good job. Young Khaled Rajad, who he had for a couple of games there at Mounties, who got included and they reshuffled their spine. He played some good footy as well.
Yeah.
So they've got some good young quality. But it was probably more the forwards. There's a lot of guys there. Even another bloke, we had Khalil, who played mostly right mass this year. Had a couple of really good games, produced some second phase, and you know, Eli Elzakim, the Parramatta back rowers and their cup squad, they had some guys there that really did a job. So good job by them to push their way through. But similar deal again in their pool. Jamaica, you know, they were there, good on it for qualifying, but with a complete and utter lack again of that sort of star power. They were just getting whipped every single game.
Yeah.
But they're the moments you hold on to. Like, you saw how happy they were, or the celebrations were, when they scored points or got their first tries, guys playing for their country, and, you know, that historical moment of posting points in a World Cup.
Mm.
It's something you have to build on, obviously. So for them, again, with the base you've got, with some guys playing the Super League, guys exposed this time to a World Cup environment, you'd hope to think in 4 years' time they qualify again or they get a bit better.
Yeah.
That's all you can do.
Develop and
keep building, obviously, on what you've done. And the other one there was Ireland. Ireland really looked pretty sharp game one with Myler and Keary and a couple of the Super League guys, and Lebanon was the big game for them, but Lebanon too good. So that obviously knocked them out of contention. But yeah, early on, bit of a surprise. Like, I thought there's a few quality names there, but they did look pretty sharp. But when push came to shove, teams again with the more NRL and Super League experience go through. And moving on to that last group, Group D, probably the one with the most competitive games. And again, it was hard to watch some of those blowouts. I just rolled through the minis. But the pool here with Tonga, Papua New Guinea, the Cook Islands and Wales, the first 3 weeks in particular, some really good games.
It was a good pool.
Tonga, Papua New Guinea come down to a last minute play where they got bailed out of jail, some offloads, bit of lack of control, then a kick through for Kyle.
They got lucky.
Yeah, Kyle Matungi. The Cook Islanders the second week were up to it, right up into it, until they got a sin bin late in the game against PNG. And then, unfortunately, the last week is obviously when everything really blew out. Tonga, who, again, were a bit scrappy the first two games, certainly kicked into gear and put 90, which I was not expecting that result. And then you had the Wales side, who, again, when you've got that lack of quality and you're up against it, really competitive, but Papua New Guinea in the last game blew them out pretty easy. And looking at them, similar deal. You could see the class of a guy like Josh Ralph, who's obviously been in NRL systems, but obviously not getting a whole lot of help there. Young Bailey Antrobus, who's contracted the Dragons, saw him do some good stuff, had a couple of carries, but overall rough time for them. Cook Islanders, no surprise. Iro and a couple of those guys that we spoke about that are on the up. Anthony Gelling, every time I've seen him play, whether in England or short time here, he's a good footballer.
Yeah.
He played some good games, but overall for them, again, bridge too far. But PNG I was impressed with. Just very solid. They've got a couple of outside backs again. I think it's Jimmy Nuklik, and you've got Roderick Ty, just that same mould as like your O-line. Just guys that do not care about their bodies when they come out of yardage.
Yeah, they're tough.
So just carry the football.
Uncompromising.
But I think a guy, I didn't mind him when he was the Cowboys. There's nothing flashy about him. But when you look at some of the backup halves in the NRL, the fact that Kyle Labert is probably not somewhere in a squad to me sort of surprises me. He's not old. He's a big body. He kicks well. He defends. Like, he does a lot of things that you could easily rely on someone to be a backup half or play four or five games a year for you.
Yeah.
And him and Lamb obviously went over, won through the championship stages. Those two, I thought, did a good job together. Apape, the nine, who won the championship player of the year, showed some quality. And their forward pack again with a couple of those cup guys like Putt and Reece Martin coming back over from Super League. They certainly did their job. Again, I don't think they've got the quality of an England, but if they complete high and play that physical power game and just try to tee off on them, I think they could certainly at least send them through with a few bruises, that's for sure.
Yeah, rough them up a bit.
But Tonga, they're the big one we've got to talk about, and it's the same thing again for me. They rolled through different centre combinations, different back row, front row combinations, how they pick their bench. Someone's going to miss out who's a good footballer in their forwards.
Yeah.
But the two biggest questions, again, spine, and in particular, fullback and hooker. Like, Kalau Matangi was playing hooker in one of the games and then started. And like, that's not going to fly in the next part of the tournament.
No way.
Havili, I don't know quite if it was health or he just wasn't in the squad. But between him and Sony, I think they need to have the hooker rotation. And then fullback, do you go with Tessinu or do you go with Kula?
I'd go with, yeah, Kula.
And halves, he seemed to have been set on Lola here, who's played the whole way through. But he's given Katoa a couple of games, and Amone played off the bench and started. Like, for me, again, Lola here doesn't set the world on fire. If I'm going in, I'm just putting my faith in the kids. I actually really like Katoa from what I've seen. But I'd be playing him and Amone.
Yeah, agree.
And just, yeah, that's what you're there for. No offence to Tui Lola here. He's a solid footballer, but there's a reason he's ended up.
Well, Katoa is much better than Lola here.
And that's my point. I think your most genuine seven is...
Even right now. Like, if it experiences your argument, that's rubbish.
Yeah, well, there's no point. Otherwise, you shouldn't have taken him. But your most genuine number seven is the kid. And, you know, Penrith were filthy about losing him for a reason, even though they've got Nathan. Dolphins went after him for a reason. And in the cup games, the 20s games, and even these few games that he's had here, he doesn't play like an 18-year-old.
No.
He certainly doesn't play like an 18-year-old. So, yeah, I'll be more interested to see how they come up with their forwards and fullback, and then again looking at their back row the other day, like between even guys like Felice and the middles they've got, and Olakau'atu, Talakai not playing in their centres, like there's a few guys, three or four in particular, that'll be pretty hard done by because they're so stacked in that department. So Tumble, I'll obviously come back in as well. He had a big game, but on the back of that leads us to our quarters, and as I said, we picked these as is except just where we had England and Samoa. So England playing Papua New Guinea. Thoughts there, obviously, England to win that one.
Yeah, of course.
The only question mark they've got is Victor Adley had an elbow issue last week. Talk was could be tournament ending or could be as little as a week. Nothing's really been announced yet. There's no lineups available quite yet. He's been very important. You know, Williams is more of a runner. Their other sort of half, they've rolled through Snowed and they obviously had Wellesby play there and he's played fullback. So wherever they sort of go, I think for them naturally being mostly ball runners, it helps to have a guy like Radley there.
Yeah.
So taking him out would hurt. And then even in their back row, as we know, Whitehead, ball skills, Bateman ball skills, they've got sort of naturally guys all across the park that can chip in with the way they play off the back of their forward pack, which has been really, really good. So taking him out would be a bit of a loss. But yeah, I think with PNG, if you're them, it's simple. Again, yourself, don't give him possession, don't give him cheap ball. Wear them down, in particular if you can work your way through that sort of starting pack and get at their halves and just complete high, you'll get your rewards. But Papua on the same time, if I think if they're physical and stay in the game, in particular those names you said before, Ty, Nuklik, and you've got Olam, etc., doing their job, and the halves defend well and kick well and just put some bruises on them, if England give them opportunities, certainly could be an interesting game. But I think England will be winning their way through there. The flip side of that draw, because it's Pool A and Pool D, Tonga and Samoa, absolute blockbuster. I was more hoping if we're going to see this, it was in a semi. But in a quarterfinal, you just have to get it right. And big thing again, I think, selections. Who do Samoa go with in the halves? Does he start with Milford and take that risk? Because in a game like this, I'd want the better defensive player, which is Harris DeVita.
Yeah, I think you're splitting hairs with that one.
Mm. And then the flip, Christian Wolf, what's he do with his spine? You know, he's fullback, he's nines, who's his half, etc. Like, you need to get that right this week.
Yeah.
I think forward packs definitely going to be comparable. You know, good benches. There's probably more, a little bit more depth in Tonga, especially after injuries to Samoa. Back fives, both powerful, plenty of metres, plenty of yards. So you're splitting hairs, but to me, it comes down to spines. And obviously, who defends better?
Yeah.
But that one's a very, very good matchup, very, very close. You're going to stick with the original pick of Tonga?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm probably leaning that way now. I'd like to say Samoa, but yeah, I've got a more of an inkling about Tonga now, the way things have panned out. But I'll be, yeah, no, with no lineups, I'm interested to see who they select on the flip side of that. Going to the other side, pools B and C, Australia first qualified against the C group second is Lebanon. It's Australia all day. Again, who he picks is probably more what we're looking for. Regan Campbell-Gillard's under a bit of a cloud after getting a cork. The spine, his edges, etc. Who's playing centre wing combinations, and then just your middles and where he's going. I think from here on out, you're picking the team in my head that you'd be playing in if you're playing in the final.
You just pick your best team every week.
And that's what I'm hoping is the case. So, again, if Regan Campbell-Gillard's available to me, I'm having him, Tino, and then I'm loading my bench up with mobility. I'd be having Carrigan, Murray, start with Hunt, have Harry come in there. You've got cover naturally then for halves and multiple spots. I guess the option there is who's your third forward. Like, he's not dropping Jake, so he's definitely going to have him in there. Mm. So it's more than likely that Regan or Tino will be off the bench for him to start at prop. But this is where my argument was at the start of the tournament, that taking somebody like a Campbell Graham, when you've already got so many guys that cover centre wing fullback, would have been better off picking an extra forward. And I would have rather have a Lodge or a Madison or something like that go over there to have here to play into that mobility, power, footwork, ball-playing game.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think not this week, but against New Zealand, could come back to bite us. But then again, if your halves are quality and you get the 50-50s, you probably emerge. So, but against Lebanon, yeah, I think they've had a great tournament. But it's probably going to be too much of an ask for, like we said, some of their fringe players. You know, your Miskis, your Mansours have really done a good job leading. And those couple of forwards, like we said, have played up above where they are, along with Raja jumping in with Moses and those young halves. But Australia, too big a gap. And then on the flip side, New Zealand up against Fiji. And it's the same point again, I guess, for New Zealand. It's just health. If Hughes is good to go, Moses, Morata, etc., even not, they're still, you know, stacked to the gills in terms of their forward pack.
Yeah.
Fiji will give a good account of themselves. But again, the hole coming in was their forwards. And much like happened against Australia, they're not going to beat New Zealand in the middle.
You wouldn't think so.
So, can't see an upset in this one for them, unfortunately.
No.
So that would lead us back to where we started originally. Except England will play Tonga in this scenario. And then you'd have Australia, New Zealand. So I think if either of those teams get through again, or if, say, if, let's hypothetical, Samoa gets through and they're playing their best football, can they beat England?
Samoa, England?
Yeah, if they were to win back through and have a rematch in a semi-final, because they're
they,
now...
Could they play each other in the semi-final? Well,
you're within your pool. So A and D, they can play against them again.
That doesn't make any sense. That's stupid.
Or the pools play each other. So that's why Australia, New Zealand, you know...
But you shouldn't be able to play the member of your pool until the grand final.
Well, I'm pretty sure because, again, the pool...
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Just crisscross, that's how it works. So if you're second in your pool and you get back to the semi-final...
Well, I think Samoa could beat them.
Mm.
But I would be tipping England, just like I did in the first game.
Yeah. So Pretty sure that's how it works, unless I'm crazy. But I think
That just seems stupid.
They link the pools together, so A and D play each other, B and C. So if they win back through and England win back through, they'll play again in the semi-final.
Okay, yeah.
And it would be vice versa if Fiji somehow upset New Zealand, they'd be then playing Australia, because otherwise, yeah, you play the guy who was second in your pool again. So, yeah. But you think Tonga would have a better chance, obviously, if they played England? Obviously, you've tipped them to go through.
Tonga would have a better chance against England.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what you're thinking, obviously.
I just think England will roll through that side of the draw.
Mm. So, more than likely, they get themselves a home final in a World Cup.
Yeah.
Which would be great for them. Australia, New Zealand, we said it before. Do you see a whole lot of difference? Like, I see both sides of it. I'm like, well, I think we're better 1-7. In particular, probably our back five. But I think the forward pack and the bench rotation, if we don't get it right, they've certainly got an advantage there. And I don't think the gap is as big as what it used to be. Brown and Hughes. Hughes made a huge difference the other night. Like, he's not Cleary, but he's a very good halfback.
Yeah.
Manu, I think, again, has shown more
than New Zealand could beat Australia, definitely.
I think nine, they've got an upper hand. We've got an upper hand, sorry. I like Brandon Smith, but obviously, like, Harry Moore and Hunt, like, we have two nines. But I think the whole 1-7... to back five, that game to me, if they complete well and do well in the middle, comes down to a can we score when we get opportunities, get out of yardage, kick well, and just sort of work our way through a game. Because I think, yeah, if it's a high completion middle type of game, I think they've definitely got an upper hand. It's just whether they can, you know, control field position and their sets well.
Yeah.
Because they've been messy through the pools, but yeah, that's the state of play for the World Cup.
Sure is.
Mm. Overall thoughts, do you think Australia, England or New Zealand?
I think it's, yeah, Australia, England or New Zealand, England. That's, yeah, that's what my gut's telling me. I think the semi-finals will be excellent. They'll both be very evenly matched. I think Australia and New Zealand are clearly the best two teams.
Mm.
They're going to play each other in the semi, it looks like.
And similar deal. Like, to be honest, this week, Tonga Samoa is going to be the closest game. And if Papua New Guinea give a good account,
that's
I think
what it looks like.
The English game could be a good game. But yeah, Australia, Lebanon, New Zealand, Fiji, those two might meet some resistance early. But overall, I think they should both win comfortably.
Yeah, they should.
But the odds with this one with bluebet.com.au, if you're going to have a bet with anyone, make sure you do it with the true blue bookie. Australia, a dollar. Literally a dollar. So you're getting zilch there. Lebanon are $51, minus 42 and a half. Is the line there. 1-12 Australia, $13.67 for Lebanon, 13 plus $1.03 for Australia, $301 for Lebanon. England are $1.06 against Papua New Guinea. They are $9, minus 22.5 the line there. 1-12, $4.25 for England, $12 for PNG, 13 plus England, $1.30, $41 PNG. New Zealand are $1.02, Fiji $13, minus 29.5 is the line there. 1-12, $7 for New Zealand, $16 Fiji, 13 plus New Zealand, $1.10, 100-1 Fiji. And as to be expected, the bookies at Bluebet have Tonga and Samoa as the closest game. Tonga are $1.52 favourites, Samoa $2.52 outsiders, minus 4.5 is the line there. So your 1-12's a bit closer, $2.90, Tonga $3.55, Samoa 13 plus, Tonga $3.620 for Samoa.
Probably neither side has been as good as what I thought they would be.
No, definitely not. And again, just I thought Tonga would have worked out their spine a bit earlier and not rotated as much. I think Samoa were more solid on the team they'd picked, but they had injuries early on, so they basically had to pick what they had there, and they got Lafay and Liggy Siau in as guys that are already living in England and can see how to fill those holes.
Yeah.
But yeah, whether they get Tago back, whether they go with 1-9 or 2-9s and which one of the halves they pick, I don't know. But the overall futures now, Australia still the favourites at $1.40. New Zealand have pushed back out to $6. England have come into $7 overall. And then your other two chances you'd think are probably Tonga or Samoa. They're further out now. Tonga $13, Samoa $21. And then the teams outside of that, PNG 126, 201 for Fiji, and Lebanon $501. To win. So there you go. It's a bit of a quick wrap up. Again, I wanted to be excited for the pool games, but once the blowout started, they got worse and worse. it got me to this point now that you were talking about. I'm hoping we get at least a couple of close games this weekend, but I definitely think the semi-finals will be Caucus.
Definitely.
Really looking forward to them. It has been nice to have some footy there, even though I haven't watched it probably as close as what I usually would. It's still been something, so no complaints for me on that front. And just while we're here as well, some other things that have been going on. Obviously, a lot's happened, in particular the Manly side of things since the last time we've left. Des Hasler, I think it was only the next day maybe, or two after.
I think it was the next day.
He got sacked.
Yeah.
So that situation obviously played out. A bit more to happen there in terms of legal payouts and what happens there. They've moved on 5 or 6 more staff since then. It hasn't still been announced formally, but Anthony Seibold will be the coach of Manly.
Yep.
In terms of assistance, I think internally they've looked at Stephen Hales. I don't know who the other assistant's going to be. Flanagan's obviously the one they've prioritised. In particular, they want to get him in with the clause that he can obviously go if he gets another head coaching job. And I think in more particularly for the start of the year, because Anthony's not going to be there.
Yeah.
For the first 2 to 3 weeks until his duties are finished with England, they want to get an experienced guy in there.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, then since then, I guess your other side of things is they've made a couple of signings, trying to fill in some gaps. We knew their tight was capped, hence what we said last year. Tapau's big deal expired. Foran basically got pushed out. Schuster, who didn't go to the World Cup to prep and try and get fitted to play number 6. So within the constraints that they've had, Ben Condon from the Cowboys, who's a good young player. They've got him on a 3-year deal. Austin Diaz come from the Tigers, guy that got a run late in the year. I think that's more, again, cap and situation. They've signed him front row. And now the talk with one of their last spots, they're going to get Cooper Johns as a backup half, who was let go by Melbourne. So not a whole lot's going to change roster-wise, obviously.
No.
But it'll be interesting to see how this all comes back together after the mess that was the back end of Manly's season. And if this is the right job for somebody to take after the way things worked out last time. The whole situation sort of surprised me, if I'm being honest. But yeah, I guess it's one of those ones you just don't know. But I guess the sooner you can get stability and hopefully have everyone back on side and heading in one direction, well, then we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah.
And your big one again is Tom Trbojevic healthy for you?
Yeah, that's huge. You need your best player fit.
Yeah, all the talk was around the Trbojevic's and are they happy and Cherry Evans and everyone's come out afterwards supported him. Apparently they liked him and he was there as assistant. So if they buy in, the whole jersey saga gets put behind them, they buy in. Like, that's probably the biggest thing that's bothered me from Manly, even with all this stuff going on, to not even announce the coach yet, to still have LAA talking, the media and guys talking. I'm like, you just need to tell everyone to stop talking. They need to stop. And it probably worries me more even for the situation, the coach and your assistants, and then a lack of signings and everything going on as well, is the World Cup. Because you're going to start your preseason with a lot of guys not there. Like, you're really not going to get your brand new head coach and your group together properly until after Christmas. So it's a hell of a year and a hell of a situation to be taken over. So I think Manly's definitely going to be a must watch next year.
Yeah.
See how this all pans out. But in the end, I guess it's no surprise, because when the owner and the head coach don't see eye to eye, you know, people made cases both ways that this was Dez's fault. And then on the flip side of that, you look at it and you go, well, they had this problem last time and you brought him back into the fold. So it's also the Penn family fault for bringing him back in. Like, at the same time, you're in the top 4 12 months ago. So in the end, it was clearly personal.
Well, yeah. Yeah, without really knowing the ins and outs of it.
So that's certainly been an interesting...
It's quite clear that they wanted him out.
Yeah.
So they got him out. They paid him out.
It's been ongoing...
There's smoke, there's fire, and that was it. It was just...
Yeah.
The result was a foregone conclusion, it seemed.
It's been an ongoing show at Manly that needs to quieten down a bit, but no different... St. George and the stuff that's been coming out the last week and a bit, like Craig Young's obviously stood down after giving a personal character reference on a letterhead.
Did he stand down for
he
that?
He stood down. He's done. He's off the board. Which people have now brought into question straight away that they were looking at Dean Young, but if he's not there, they probably won't look to bring Dean Young in. The guys that asked for releases and Jaden Sullivan and Tyrell Sloan have apparently been told, don't worry, he's going to be gone at the end of the year. And you hear stuff like that, you're like, well, why don't you just fire him now?
That's horrendous.
Like, everything that's coming out of there, you're just like, Jesus. And then George Burgess comes out after he gets sacked and fries him, and Gazuski, Jack Kuchevsky, says his part after what happened with him mid-year and not playing another game after that, after being named in the starting 13. You're just like, wow, this is another one where there's just stuff coming out. And I didn't read as much into the postseason function. Again, a lot of guys should have been there that were available to go, but there were guys that were at the World Cup, etc. But for the Dragons, same deal. If you already know what you're going to be doing in 12 months' time, rip the Band-Aid off and do it now, because you are just wasting another season. Whether results are not going to be good or not, if he's not going to be a coach in 12 months, do it now. And more crazy to me, there was talk around this Flanagan thing, which hasn't been confirmed yet either, but I said it last year. I think your next head coach for me is in your club right now. I wouldn't let him go to Manly. I'd go to him right now and say, do you want to be a head coach? You're in charge. He's fired. Say the word.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be letting him go. That's just my opinion.
It's hard on.
That club, again, is another one, and probably the bigger one. It's only small fish, and it doesn't mean these guys are going to be first graders, but the amount of players I've heard, in particular the last month, 16s, 18s, on all levels, that are just pouring out of that place, that's not a good thing.
Well, it's not.
Because they're getting pipped before you even get them in the gate, or they've played 1 year of representative football for you, and other clubs have got them.
Yeah.
Canberra just signed 4 or 5. Bulldogs took a couple. Like, there's players going out of their left, right, centre. Dolphins took 2 or 3 for their inaugural squad. Yeah. And when you're already in a situation where you've got your young guys who are, you know, upset, not happy with the situation and trying to get out, and then your next few generations are already signing elsewhere, are looking at what's happening above and going, well, I'm better off elsewhere, that's alarm bells all around.
It's not good.
So if I'm a Dragons fan at the moment, I'm a little bit worried. But moving on from then, Dolphins are fishing the competition now. We've ticked over. 7-team competition. Wayne's had plenty to say. Disappointed, again, after the fact of missing out on another player at Munster and a couple other guys. But since we last spoke, confirmed a few more signings, up to 26 now. Palasa Famasuli, former Roosters at the Dragons, goes there as a bit of forward depth. And Oliver Gildart, who he obviously had in England, got out of the Tigers. He's now signed for 1 year at the Dolphins. So 4 more spots to fill for them. They're obviously sounding out everyone left, right and centre and still looking to fill those gaps. They got 4 or 5 guys from Capras who they're linked with doing a training trial. They've got 5 development players. But, yeah, he's certainly been plenty vocal. Oh, Wayne, I don't think this has quite panned out how he hoped it would.
No.
So, not happy, but interesting. And probably the last sort of 2 bits I've got here, Tigers been awfully busy. They've put on hold talks with Hastings, Dewey. Tim Sheens has apparently been loving up to Moses over in England. They're trying to bring him back on big money. They already missed out on Munster. They're trying to get a deal, which today there was talk that they're very close to getting John Bateman to come back to the NRL on a 3-year deal. They're talking to the Newcastle Knights about David Clemmer and Tyson Frizzell, trying to get at least one of them. I think the Knights are trying to put that on, we'll swap you for Luke Brooks. They're not blind to that situation just yet. I think that the Tigers are certainly trying to be very, very busy. They've still got the issue with Dane Laurie as well, who wants a couple-year extension. They're only willing to offer 1, which is basically telling him that, you know, we don't think you're long-term then, if they're only going to go 1 year. So expect some stuff to happen from the Tigers in the next few weeks. That'll be quite interesting, and more particular the Brooks side of things. Because once Newcastle moved on from Jake Clifford, who's now gone to England, I thought then and there with all the negotiating going on, they're clearly trying to get Brooks right now.
Yeah.
So whether that pans out or not, we'll have to wait and see. But Moses back to the Tigers, good idea, bad idea?
Well, like, it's a good idea.
To pay top dollar?
They're going to have to. They're going to have to pay someone.
What about Bateman? What do you think about that, with the way that ended and where he's at?
I don't love it at all. I think, yeah, like, he's a good player. He's going to, if he goes there and plays his best footy, he's going to help them.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't like how he left.
Yeah.
He's another 3 years on his clock. And going to the Tigers and playing well is going to be a severely more difficult proposition than what it was to go to Canberra and play good footy.
Yeah, no, that's the big one.
Particularly with the style, the Canberra style certainly suited Bateman.
Clemmer or Frizzell, someone you'd be looking at if you're Tigers?
No.
Clemmer on his contract, definitely not. Frizzell, if they're willing to pay part of it, I would. They've got him up there about $700,000. I don't know if I'd be happy to, you know, have two back.
Well, it depends what's your plan there. Like, is it Are you signing them for experience? Are you signing them because you think they're good players? Like, I just think Father Time's probably gone past them both a little bit.
Yeah, well, they're certainly trying to freshen things up at Newcastle. Nathan
Brown's another one, you know, like.
Yeah, well, that's the other one that's been linked. So they could end up with Brown, Bateman, Clemmeller.
Yeah.
A lot of guys that are probably heading to the
Dad's Army.
The 30s or
which
sort of thing.
Which is cool if that's your plan. Your plan is to get experience and.
Well, if you're going to do it for a year or two with the young blokes, I can understand it. But as long as you're not taking them on board with the proviso, you're going to be given long-term extensions. Which is also why I look at someone like Bateman and think, well, I've seen a little bit of him since he's been playing over there, and I don't think he's played anywhere near the level he did when he was here.
No.
And again, is he the sort of person you're bringing in to help develop youth? I think if you're going to get one of, say, a Clemmer or a Frizzell, if you know they're a good character, played at that highest level, they're one of two, not both, I'd probably be happy to take one in.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Bateman one, I guess. The other side of it's the fee. They were talking about the fee being almost 700 grand. Like, Canberra got burnt on that as well.
Yeah.
They bought him, got a year out of him, had problems 12 months later, and you've also paid a shitload just to get him out of his contract in the first place. So, not sure how that one plays out. And Penrith, very, very busy the last few weeks. Tyrone Peachey, Charlie Staines swap deal, which is another one I forgot. He's gone to the Tigers.
Mm.
They got Peachey to ratify his deal, so he's taking a pay cut. Not a bad idea. Get back someone utility value.
Yeah, I guess.
Who's been there before, you know, after a rough trot at a couple of clubs where obviously winning hasn't been high on the priority list. You think he'd be happy and motivated to come back to that environment?
You'd think so.
They also made a couple of good, you know, depth signings. They got Hoskins out of Brisbane, who I thought was actually pretty good in the few games he got, former Newcastle Knight. So that's a pretty good jag. And Jack Cogger, who was a very good player coming through, to me, just bad clubs. And that's, you know, what gets you flicked early. He went from the Knights to the Dogs when they're at their worst and ended up in England. He's still very young.
Yeah.
Plenty of time. I think he's only 23 or
24. Yeah.
So to go from having a guy like an O'Sullivan to bringing him in, I'm still not sure what they're doing with Kurt Falls. There's been nothing there yet, or whether they're going to stick with a Jack Cole or someone else they've got pushing through. But yeah, some good depth signings there. So.
Definitely.
And probably more good news if you're a Penrith fan. It seems like Liam Martin for now has extended for one more year. So they obviously couldn't agree on a long-term extension, but they're very keen, clearly, to have him there, and he's very keen to be there. So he's done basically what Jeremy and I did and said, look, for now, let's just come up with a decent figure and we'll deal with it again in
12 months'
time. So the last sort of thing I wanted to do while we're here is just look at exactly that side of things. As of now, player market has rolled over. There's some big names who are coming off, and Penrith in particular are in that category that we just talked about. So if they kick that can 12 months further down the road this year, the bigger names, Brian Totter has already told the club, obviously, he's going to market, not because he wants to leave, but he obviously wants to test his value. He took unders last time. Stephen Crichton's been talked about at the Bulldogs, the Dolphins on fullback money. There's not many others there, but sort of with what they've done with their setup there, I think someone's going to end up going. I think more than likely in my eyes, if I was going to say one was going to be gone in 12 months' time, I think it'd be Stephen Crichton. Like, you can pay top market money for a winger, that's fine, but that's not fullback money. There's going to be a club to me that's going to blow it out of the water. So at the end for Stephen Crichton, it's going to come down to winning or not winning. He's already on almost 700,000 right now, which to me for a centre is top market. And again, Manu's on that money. Manu to me is a lot better player than Stephen Crichton.
I agree with that.
So if you want fullback money or that same money again,
go somewhere else.
You're going to have to go.
Yeah.
But are you going to be happy?
I think that's what's going to happen.
So if you're him and the two names that have popped up immediately have been more, say, Dolphins or Bulldogs, which no surprise when Seroldo went, just like Barrett or whatever, you're going to dip back in the well a few times.
Yeah, plus players are going to want to go there as well.
Yeah. Do you think that would be a good decision? Like the Dolphins signed to me, so I don't think that's a long-term sale fullback.
No.
But I'm assuming, again, if you're more of a Western Sydney boy, you're probably more likely to look at the clubs that are close at home. So the Bulldogs certainly being there. If I'm Brian Totter, I wouldn't be going anywhere. But again, I guess it depends on what market they put on him and what market is out there.
Yeah.
Wingers are important, but again, the market has still got a certain point. If he's looking for that top winger market, which is about 600,000, and Penrith aren't willing to go to the party, he might also end up somewhere.
Potentially, yeah.
But yeah, that's two big names if they've pushed the Liam Martin one down the road. We know that the Rabbitohs were worried having all three of their spine coming off. There was talks the other day that all three, done deal. So Latrell Mitchell was going to sign apparently a 4-year extension. Wow. I think to 2027. Cook and Cody, 2-year extensions till 2025. So for Cook, that's the interesting one because he already has another year to go on top. And they've got Mamazoulos there. So that probably puts a position there where, again, a bit like they did previously with Josh Cook on the decision with Reynolds and Ilias, which they went the opposite way, probably puts in a position there where, you know, you're going to have to give up somebody at some stage. Obviously, if you're going to extend on that side of things. But he's a big one. Onto the market, the Roosters, Victor Radley coming onto the market. Jared in his last year, Sam Walker. He's said all the right things and doesn't want to go anywhere. But again, dollars and cents, they're under cap pressure. Lodgie still hasn't fit under their cap just yet. They're trying to get him for next year after getting Paulo and Crichton and a couple of guys. So Luke Brooks' last season, as we spoke about, it's going to be interesting. Eels already lost a few players. Pennacini's going to hit the market this year. There's going to be plenty of clubs, including Rugby Union, who are quite interested, as that's what he's played. Coming through, Dylan Brown is a huge one. And I guess this was sort of the one, like Crichton, I'd say. If you're Dylan Brown, stay or go?
I'll be staying.
Yep. What do you think he's worth?
800.
What if he's already on basically that now, which he's close to?
Someone would probably pay him a million.
That was going to be my question again. I think if I'm a club out there, and the match for me is the Warriors. I'm not saying that's the right thing for him, but Johnson coming off contract, Harris DeVita left. You've had a few years there where you've lost development. If I'm the Warriors, I would have went for Manu last year, but a New Zealand boy, I'd be going after Dylan Brown. That would be my priority signing.
Yeah.
So I think Parramatta are going to have some real competition, not they already do for Moses, because realistically, both those guys are going to walk in and going to need 900 minimum. Mm. And Moses is already on, again, above that, so he's not taking unders. So Parramatta have got a real challenge on their hands here.
Yeah.
Because both those guys on the market are going to get a million plus offers minimum.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
Whether they can keep both or get them to agree on equal value deals or incentivised deals, I don't know. But they've got a real big battle on their hands this year with both their halves coming off contract.
Mm.
That's not an ideal situation. You really don't want that lining up that way. The Cowboys, again, like we said, they're one of these teams, again, a lot of guys that are sort of on the fringe, but guys are on the up. But that contract for a guy like Nenai has just been kicked 12 months down the road. I'm sure they're happy to get back to the table, but his value certainly hasn't decreased. He's now gone to a World Cup after having the season he's done and playing for Queensland. If anything, at his age, smart just to say, oh, I'll just do a one-year deal first.
Yeah.
And see what happens. Now he's at the peak of the game. So similar deal. I guess at the end of the day, it comes down to dollars and cents. Like for an 18-year-old, 19-year-old back row, I still think you need halves and other guys around you. So if I'm the Cowboys, I think, you know, maximum I'm probably getting to about 7 with the team they've got. But open market, there'll be someone who's willing to pay 8 or more probably for Jeremiah Nenai.
Yeah.
Which, again, I don't agree with it, but for their situation, what they're doing, that's a difficult one. Melbourne have got Nelson after the loss of the forwards they've had. It's probably one they can't afford to lose.
Absolutely.
And Rugby Union was already sniffing around because that's his background. That's a big one for them this year that they're going to have to deal with. I already think he's pretty well paid. Like, for a guy that only has to play 30 or so minutes a game, the talk is he's on close to $700,000. But international rugby, if he ends up French rugby or anything else like that, like, they pay stupid money.
Mm.
Stupid money. So he's one of the bigger names hitting the market. Dave Fifita, and he's already been linked elsewhere. Apparently they weren't willing to match the money from last time, which is no surprise, but yeah, they're going to negotiate. But open market talk is already that Canberra have a bit of a double plan come out a few weeks ago, no surprise, to go for his partner, much like Newcastle did with Millie and Adam Elliott. So if Shea Lee ends up at the inaugural Raiders team, the talk is they'll go after David Fifita as well.
Mm.
So interesting, but a similar deal again. Like him now, open market, what do you think David Fifita could get? You think no one's going to go there again at 1.2? Surely not a million again.
No.
But similar to a Nenai, like I think if you go on top of the back row market knowing you need help, surely you can't go much further than 700-800. Off his form, I don't think you could even pay him 800.
I wouldn't think so.
But that one would be definitely interesting. And Cronulla, similar deal. Successful year, lots of guys need to be tied up. Royce Hunt only signed a one-year deal, straight back to the market. Katoa, William Kennedy, the depth of Lachlan Miller, Jesse Ramien, Talakai played Origin once Money Trindle's off contract. So, big year for Cronulla. Probably need to see some success. You've got the Bulldogs, who have 15 off contract again, have turned over 27 of their 30 over the last 3 years. It's almost a completely new squad. Josh Jackson's just retired. And I think the other one's Brisbane, who are going to have a few there. Flegler's already open to the market, and they're talking $700,000 from some teams for him. Herbie Farmworth only signed a one-year extension. Dolphins were very, very keen. The Roosters were keen. They've already come out and said again they're interested. So that's just some of the names that are now officially on the open market.
A lot to be played out.
There is a fair bit going on in the NRL, but I think, things are going to get crazy when people get home from the World Cup, I think.
Big time.
We'll see some contracts and some movement early doors. But other than that, some of that news and a couple of things going at the clubs, you got anything going on?
Not much.
Any news, really? Anything?
No, nothing.
Not much doing. All right. Well, that pretty much wraps us up there. I think from here on in, we just punch in a couple of short shows like this with any news and World Cup update.
Sounds
good. Then we'll have a break after.
Yep.
Shorter break this year, but then we'll come back as we do when the season kicks. So there you go for now. If you're a Manly fan, fingers crossed things quiet down. Next year can be a bit more positive. If you're a Dragons fan, I don't know what the bloody hell is going on there, but it seems like for the majority of the last few years, all we've talked about is trouble at the Dragons. And if you're a Penrith fan and a Tigers fan or any of these teams that are making moves, fingers crossed you can bring in some better players and improve your situation. But for Penrith, I think you'd be very bloody happy with the news you've heard this week.
Yeah.
Good depth signings, getting somebody back who you know who's got good value on it and less of money, and then you've apparently got Martin to commit at least now for a year. So a lot of positives going on there. But that wraps us up. Thanks to bluebet.com.au. If you're going to have a bet with anyone, do it with the True Blue Bookies. Our last charity bet of the year was on New Zealand to win the World Cup. Still not sure how that's quite looking after the pool form, but I guess we're on a couple of weeks' time.
We will.
See what happens there. But for now, anybody out there, if you've got any questions, got anything else going on, feel free to hit us up on the Twitter or the inbox. Hope everyone is doing well. We'll be back next week. But for now, enjoy your week and enjoy your rugby league.
Bring it on. Give us more. Where are you going? What's going on here? Is that it?
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.